Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Catherine Skiba, who's an award-winning journalist with the Chicago Tribune. Previously, she was with the U.S. News & World Report and the Milwaukee Journal. She's the author of a memoir based on the Iraq invasion, Sister in a Band of Brothers, embedded with the 101st Airborne in Iraq. Welcome to Background Briefing, Catherine Skiba.
Thank you for having me on your program.
So tell me, you've been covering the Jesse Jackson trial, which, of course, was conducted in Washington, D.C., although he represented Chicago as a congressman. And the sentencing was today, and it seemed extraordinarily dramatic. Your piece is very alive with descriptions. And so give me a sense then of the contrition here, which, of course, is to be expected. But I guess with his father being present, and I take it that there was some compassion shown by the judge, in as much as him and his wife are allowed to serve their sentences not concurrently, so that because they have young children, right, the 9-year-old and the 13-year-old.
Yes. Well, let's look at the fundamentals of the case. For starters, it's very rare in the criminal justice system to have his and her defendants' guilty pleas, which we had in February, and today back-to-back sentencing, and they lasted 4.5 hours in total. Now, the congressman, with his wife, they took roughly $750,000 in their campaign funds and frittered away this money in an astonishing way. A holistic retreat in Martha's Vineyard, a cruise on a Disney ship, memorabilia from Vegas like Michael Jackson's fedora, and then you go on and on, furs, appliances, children's furniture, restaurant meals. It's kind of a dizzying array, 3,100 separate transactions. In the end, the former congressman got 30 months behind bars. His wife got 1 year in prison. Now, it's important to note, as the prosecutors did, this was not an unknowing spouse. She was at various points his campaign treasurer, a very well-paid consultant to the campaign, and in 2012, his campaign manager. The judge, they did make a very tearful and poignant remark to the judge. That's any defendant's prerogative, and we were fully expecting them to speak because as elected officials, he, a congressman, and she for several years, an alderman in Chicago, you know, these are people who are familiar with the microphone and well-spoken and intelligent and educated. So try as they may, Mrs. Jackson very desperately wanted to be put on probation. And after not reporting $600,000 in income taxes, that was really never going to be in the cards. Congressman Jackson got a break in the sense that the government wanted him behind bars for 4 years, and he came up with a 2.5-year sentence. He'll get about 15% credit if he behaves well behind bars. And both of them also should get, toward the very end of their term, some home detention or halfway house confinement.
And, of course, just to add to the loot that you've written about in your article in the Chicago Tribune, both Jacksons get prison terms. He'll serve, Catherine Skiba. There was also a $43,000 Rolex watch and a guitar that belonged to Eddie Van Halen. But isn't this whole thing is also, I mean, the trial itself surely goes back to the critical period under Blagojevich when the choice for the who would succeed who would accede to the United States Senate or at least get to run for the very symbolic seat of Barack Obama. Isn't that where this whole train wreck began?
Well, no, in a word. Let me say there was no trial because they pled guilty, they cooperated with the investigation, and today was the sentencing. So they got credit, actually, for sparing the government the burden of two trials, which, sometimes trials can be a roll of the dice. So the prosecutors in February at the time of the guilty pleas knew that they had gotten them on substantial felony violations. And a story I'm preparing for tomorrow, Chicago Tribune, quotes the lead prosecutor with something he's told me before. He said this to me in February. The Blagojevich case, now this is Rod Blagojevich, the Illinois governor who wanted to sell or trade Barack Obama's open Senate seat. This is late 2008 after Obama has won the White House. the allegations were that emissaries for Jackson offered Blagojevich up to $6 million in campaign cash that Jackson was to have raised for Blagojevich to be appointed to the Senate. And the suspicion long had been with this very aggressive prosecution of Blagojevich and his cronies that somehow at that time Jackson fell under scrutiny. Now, that's not what Ron Machen, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, says. And he's very careful about sources and methods, but he also says that there was a long paper trail. I mean, most of this was credit card transactions. It was kind of mind-boggling that people would be so foolish. So it was a long paper trail, and I know the government has all sorts of traps out there for credit card fraud and credit card abuse and financial misconduct. And my own opinion is that's perhaps how Jackson got tripped up.
So he wouldn't. Do you think, though, that given that he was a sort of front runner, in a sense, to the open seat following President Obama's election, that did the White House do any checking on him? I mean, if he was so flagrant in embezzling his own campaign funds, would they have how much do you think they considered him? And if so, would they have done a background check?
Okay, so let me point out that the way the election law works in Illinois, when that seat came open in late 08, because of Barack Obama's no longer in the Senate, he's president-elect, it fell solely to the Illinois governor to appoint a replacement. And I don't know that Jackson was a front runner per se. He had served in the House for many years. He wanted the seat very desperately. Let's remember that being the son of Reverend Jackson, who ran twice for president with some success, he didn't win, but he had a very formidable campaign. You know, all eyes were on Congressman Jackson for many, many years, and people thought he might be the first black president. And frankly, it's come out that he felt jealous about Barack Obama's, you know, huge, quick rise in Illinois politics to the U.S. Senate and to the White House. So it did fall only to Blagojevich, and we ended up getting Roland Burris for over a year in that seat, not Jesse Jackson Jr.
Well, indeed, and that cost the Democrats. So, I mean, clearly you're correcting me here, which I need to be corrected, because I have a kind of just the memory of what was going on there. And in terms of I recall, though, that Jackson appeared to be kind of auditioning, and weren't there some telephone intercepts as well, where he was really basically pitching himself. So my memory of that period was pretty much that Blagojevich sort of screwed the Democrats, didn't he? That they lost that seat after Burris.
Yes, they did. They lost it in 2010, and people were very, you know, Roland Burris had his own baggage and was not considered the most formidable pick for that job. And in 2010, that seat fell to Senator Mark Kirk, who currently serves. He's a Republican from Illinois. And, you know, I will apologize. I didn't cover the Blagojevich case on a day-to-day basis, so I can't
right.
tell you what was on the intercepts. I can tell you Jesse Jackson testified at Blagojevich's second trial, because the first trial, you know, there were so many counts thrown out, that Jackson was never really fully implicated by Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor in the case. But, you know, I come in Washington. Jackson fell under scrutiny by the House Ethics Committee for using staff resources in his lobbying campaign to be appointed to the Senate and that sorts of misconduct. In fact, that House probe was still underway and not concluded when Jackson, just after Thanksgiving, excuse me, the day before Thanksgiving last fall, resigned from his seat and acknowledged the federal investigation that came to fruition today.
Well, I suppose, though, just in terms of sort of stepping back and looking at the extraordinary politics of this whole sorry story, starting with Blagojevich and ending up with the sentencing today of Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife, there's a sense here that, you know, we've heard over the decades about political corruption, and of course the Republicans keep referring to Obama and the political machine in a derogatory way. But it does seem in many ways that that there's also this extraordinary element of personalities and rivalries and Blagojevich screwing the Democrats and putting this Burris in, who was a complete disaster. It was almost like his way of telling, you know, giving them the finger, you know. So is it is
well, welcome to Chicago politics.
Is that it? Well, it certainly, you know, as you pointed out, that it cost them a very important seat, and this is a Senate, as we all know, that hangs in the balance. And if they had a few more, I think it did. I know that they lost the seat in Massachusetts. It cost them the possibility of avoiding filibusters, but it certainly would have helped to have somebody in there that could have won re-election.
Having said that, I would just note that the Democrat who was up for the Senate seat in 2010 was not the most. He had some ethical challenges of his own. The Democrats.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
The Democrats didn't perhaps field their best candidate, and Mark Kirk prevailed. And we do have a history in Illinois of, you know, while much of Greater Chicagoland is majority Democratic, the downstate regions of the state, that is to say the collar counties of Chicago and the outlying regions, are much more conservative, more Republican than the Cook County Democrats might have you believe. Or the Cook County Democrats might exemplify, I should say.
So just one of the things that jumped out at me from your article, Catherine, is the idea of or the picture that you painted of them showing up, emerging from a white SUV, accompanied by Judy Smith, a crisis communication expert and former federal prosecutor whose work inspired the TV show Scandal.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, this is a bizarre show with this Kerry Washington star who stars in it as this fixer in Washington, who also happens to be having an affair with the President of the United States on the side. It is, I guess, what they'd call adult soap opera. But describe this person then. If she inspired that character, boy, you could get some copy out of that.
Well, you know, the one thing that surprised me when I got to know a little bit about Judy Smith, let's say that she's a crisis communications expert, and of course Hollywood is full of people like that. She helps people in trouble, trouble with the law, trouble with public relations disasters. But she is a former federal prosecutor in the same office that went up against the Jacksons, so she knows the law. And basically she's brought on by the lawyers. I should say, I've probably never really spoken to her very much. I've spoken to her colleague a bit. But they're not necessarily there to, I mean, they're there to, I was talking to someone today and I said, well, it's sort of concierge treatment for the defendants. And again, no disrespect meant for Judy Smith, but she's there to help them and guide them and be there for them at their side, at their ear, with this throng of, you know, 30 reporters and photographers, and run interference and protect them to the extent she can while they go through what's, let's face it, an incredibly traumatic experience. And yet I'm not sympathetic towards what the Jacksons did. And I don't mind saying that Jackson's 2nd Congressional District of Illinois was, you know, remapped over the years, and it took in the town where I grew up, my hometown, just outside the city of Chicago. I have sympathy for the people who were not represented by these two individuals while they were on spending sprees. But that said, you know, they have children, they are giving away their freedoms, and so, of course, I suppose there's any criminal sentencing I've covered, and I've covered many, you do feel a tinge of, you know, human sympathy at the downfall of two people who once held so much promise.
And, of course, the father, Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., was very much there today, and he's been carrying, obviously, the burden of this. And he addressed this idea of his son having a bipolar disorder. And, of course, there's been some cynicism and skepticism about how real that is, which he addressed. So do you think that he adequately addressed that suspicion, that this was a convenient illness?
I tell you, my colleague Marina Villanueva covered Reverend Jackson today. And Reverend Jackson has tried repeatedly to make the case that his son is a very, very sick person. It was June of 2012 that Jackson mysteriously took a leave from Congress. It was blamed on exhaustion. It emerged that he was at Sierra Tucson, a very high-end treatment facility in Arizona. Around the time of late July, he was moved to the Mayo Clinic. In fact, he was in and out of Mayo a couple of times. He actually won re-election last November while a patient at the Mayo Clinic. And I can tell you the government's response to that was a disappointment that there was not more of a factual basis for his mental condition put into the public record. Now, here reporters are a little bit handicapped because what was put into the record in many cases was redacted. But they had one expert saying he had bipolar disorder. They had another saying he had non-specific mood disorder, probably bipolar. Today, an assistant prosecutor complaining said there is no there there. And what he went on to say is that normally when mental health issues are litigated in a case like this, there's discovery, there's an examination of the defendant, there are medical records. And I can tell you the top prosecutor today, after the sentencing, this will be in my story in the Chicago Tribune tomorrow, pointed out that this years-long crime spree, much of that time, predated these two very noted stints in high-end treatment facilities. So I can tell you something the judge said. Sandy Jackson never represented any, you know, mental infirmaries on her part. And the judge wondered, with this huge spending spree they'd been on, why nothing in the record suggested anything was ever returned to the stores where they were purchased. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, frankly, we'll ever really know, because of medical confidentiality reasons, where the absolute truth lies with that.
Right. Well, but clearly there's the skepticism will remain. And I thank you very much for joining us here today, Catherine Skiba.
Ian, thank you so much, and all the best.
All the best, and thank you for giving us a description of Chicago politics.
My pleasure. Call anytime.
Okay. Again, I've been speaking with Catherine Skiba, who's an award-winning journalist with the Chicago Tribune. Previously, she was with the U.S. News and World Report and the Milwaukee Journal, and she's the author of a memoir based on the Iraq invasion, Sister in a Band of Brothers Embedded with the 101st Airborne in Iraq. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcast at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.